Hello and welcome to the podcast of Lotus Eaters. This is episode 430 on the 6th of July 2022. I'm your host Harry, joined today by Carl.
Hello.
And we're going to be going over the looming collapse of the Conservative Party, why Just Stop Oil should just stop protesting, and also how corporate America is basically nurseries for adults. Just to remind everybody that we do, I think, have a live stream, a hangout going out this afternoon at 3:30, where you and Callum are going to be talking about Douglas Murray's newest book, The War on the West. So if you're interested and you're a premium, bronze or above member, you should check that out. With that, let's get into the news.
So the looming collapse of the Conservative Party, or Boris Johnson's Conservative government, is finally upon us. And honestly, are you sad to hear it?
No.
No. Just profound disappointment.
Well, these people, I mean, he got Brexit done, which, as far as I can tell, has had no discernible effect on anything that people were hoping it would get done. Immigration hasn't gone down, it's gone up.
Yeah.
He put us in lockdown for almost 2 years. Inflation is ridiculous. Cost of living is ridiculous.
Because Rishi Sunak decided to print money like it was going out of
fashion. Yeah, we've got an energy crisis as alongside the cost of living crisis. So, you know, I can't really say...
Housing crisis caused by the immigration crisis. I mean, there are so
many... We could go on.
Yeah, we could go on. And there were so many people like, oh, well, Boris is going to be Britain's Trump. It's like, yeah... We wish, okay? Boris is just profoundly disappointing from everyone's perspective. The people who wanted him to do things that were based and patriotic didn't get what they wanted, and the people who want to turn this into a communist state obviously didn't get what they wanted either, because they were conservatives in government. And so no one was happy, and so thankfully it looks like it's coming to an end, and the question will be who's going to replace him, but we'll get into that in a minute. So before we start, if you want to support us, you can go to lotuseats.com and sign up and get access to articles like this one, Something Rotten in the State of Britain by Noel Yaxley, where he's just going through the profound rot that lies at the heart of the British political system that is infecting the entire country. And honestly, it's not a great advert because it's disappointing reading. You know, it's like, well, that's true. Well, he's completely correct on all of this.
If you want to be informed on these things, it's very important to be informed. It's just that being informed...
It's not good news.
Yeah. Isn't always good for your mood.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on to not good news. So this catastrophe for Boris. Now, before we start, you might be aware that Boris has weathered many catastrophes so far. Less than, what was it, 2 months ago? Something like that was the vote of no confidence?
It was last month.
It was last month. Not even... Come on.
That's how quick things are moving at the moment.
So last month, Boris survived a vote of no confidence, although it was quite shaky. You know, a large portion of his party was actively against him. But this should have stood him in good stead for at least a year. And then this happened. So the Tory deputy chief whip is a guy called Chris Pincher. And he is a homosexual man who has been accused of pinching people. Like, actually, like, molesting people. And he resigned as the deputy chief whip in a surprise resignation letter a week ago, where he said to Boris he'd drank far too much and embarrassed himself and other people. He sent his letter of resignation because at the night before, at the Carlton Club, which is the Conservative Party's private member club, he'd apparently got drunk and groped two people, I think it was. Groped two men.
Not great.
No, not great, according to The Sun, anyway. But that's probably true. And so, if we move on to the next one. Boris suspended him, eventually, after a few days of this sort of building momentum, because Boris didn't immediately get rid of him for some reason, or, like, you know, suspended from the party, even though he'd resigned from being the deputy whip. And this is the point they're going to make. Well, sexual assault is about power, and in fact, Keir Starmer made this point in Prime Minister's Questions, that's still going on at the moment, as we record this. The problem is that Boris raised this person to be the deputy chief whip, and so he gave a sexual predator more power with which to abuse people. That's the framing on this. And the thing is, the framing doesn't appear to be wrong. And the question is, well, why would he do this? Well, it seems that it's because Chris Pincher was a diehard supporter of Boris Johnson, and so Boris was promoting a sexual predator out of the predator's loyalty to Boris. Not good optics, let's be clear. Anyway, so Boris apparently four days ago suspended Pincher from the party because he had, as they say, he'd initially resisted the call to suspend him, but bowed to pressure after the complaint was made about him to the parliamentary watchdog on sexual misconduct. So you can see that Boris was initially like, no, I'm I'm not going to get rid of this supporter of mine, even though he keeps molesting people. Why? You know?
Deputy Pincher just doing his job.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, the meme magic is real, sadly enough.
Incidentally, apparently he had the, like, there was a sort of nickname or catchphrase about him, Pincher by name, Pincher by nature. that was going around right now. We laugh, but it's not funny. It's just stupid. It's ridiculous. It's an absolute farce.
How Boris could think that something like this wouldn't eventually come back and, I suppose, pinch him on the arse is astounding.
That's a great question. But anyway, so he apparently changed his mind after speaking to one Tory MP who'd witnessed the incident and was in contact with the victim. And then a separate claim surfaced on Friday from a young Conservative activist who claimed to be subject to an unwanted sexual advance from Mr. Pincher last year. The activist told the Times that the MP had put his hand on his knee and told him he would go far in the party at an event during the Conservative Party conference in Manchester. And Pincher had previously resigned as the whip in 2017 after being accused of inappropriate behaviour by an Olympic swimmer and former Conservative candidate. So this just, I mean, he was cleared after an investigation for this, but like, cleared is a very interesting way of framing it. It's like, well, we found that he's done nothing wrong. So yeah, but that doesn't mean he didn't do it.
Of course not.
Anyway, but then more allegations started coming out about Pincher. A slew of six further allegations about his sexual misconduct emerged in the Sunday papers, including claims of groping MPs. So why do you have this person near you at all?
And he's not just making it difficult for you from a purely optic standpoint. If he's groping other MPs as well, he's making things difficult just from a workplace environment.
Yeah, but why would you... Why this guy? Why this guy?
I mean, Boris has been through so many scandals recently that I can understand that he would want to surround himself with people who are diehard supporters. And the only logic I could possibly pass out from this is, who's going to be more of a diehard supporter than somebody that you keep excusing for such behaviour?
But there's one thing having diehard supporters, but there's other thing. Another thing is having open liabilities. Which, and even if you don't care that he keeps molesting people, which strikes me as the sort of thing you probably should care about, even if for some reason that doesn't bother you, this guy's just a liability at best. But anyway, a source at 10 Downing Street said that Johnson probably knew about the allegations because of his nickname, Pincher by name, Pincher by nature, but he argued he was unable to look into the unsubstantiated rumour before appointing him as deputy chief whip in February. The Times published an article saying how Boris probably knew about the allegations, and it seems that that's probably the case. They say that sources involved in discussions about the makeup of Johnson's first government said the Prime Minister had been well aware of the Pincher's alleged inappropriate behaviour and had used to joke that he'd cornered the market in sex pest MPs supporting his leadership.
That's not a good look at all.
No, that's not a good look. Mogg came out and was like, well, you can't judge people based on rumours. There's gossip and rumours, like, yeah. And they keep coming and coming and coming. You keep getting, a flurry of allegations from people, literally MPs, saying this guy keeps molesting us. Could you get rid of him, please? And eventually Boris's like, oh, if I have to. Like, this is the problem with Eton. But anyway, so Boris came out and apologised for this, obviously, a couple of days ago. Apologised for making Chris Pincher the deputy chief whip, saying, in hindsight, it was the wrong thing to do. So really, you needed hindsight for that, Boris.
Yeah, well, you know, it's all 2020, isn't it?
Like, should I put this known sexual molester in a position of power? No, in hindsight, that looks bad. But within minutes of this apology, Sajid Javid and Rishi Sunak both dramatically resigned. And so this was Rishi Sunak saying, well, the public rightly expect better government, expect government to be conducted properly, competently and seriously, blah, blah, blah. And so Rishi Sunak has decided to resign. He was Chancellor of the Exchequer, and Sajid Javid, who is Secretary of State, also resigned. Sajid has made quite an emotional show of this, so who knows. But he says, oh, it's been an enormous privilege, blah, blah, blah. I can't in good conscience continue. And then a slew of resignations began that may well still be going on by the time you get this. So the Minister for Children and Families, which was Will Quince, resigned. The Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, Jonathan Gullis, resigned. The Parliamentary Private Secretary, Laura Trott, resigned. She's an MP as well. She resigned. And if we go to the BBC, actually, they have a list of resignations. which was featured on here at some point. This is a live update, so it's probably not the top now. So in addition to this was Alex Chalk was a Solicitor General, Jonathan Gullis, as I said, Saqib Bhatti, which is the Health Secretary or Principal Private Secretary to the Health Secretary, a bunch of others. And so about a dozen people basically have resigned, who are close to Boris. And so the question is, right, who's left? And is it likely that Boris is going to survive this? And so the Times have been asking this. Apparently, not really, at least in theory, right? Because, as I said earlier, because he had survived the vote of no confidence, you can't have another one for another year, according to Conservative Party internal rules, unless these rules are changed.
How can they be changed?
Well, the thing is, this happened to Theresa May. So Sir Graham Brady is the chairman of the Backbench 1922 Committee, which is like, I don't know how to describe them. They're like, they're like a kind of the Dark Lords of the Conservative Party.
Oh, okay. Who shrouded in shadows.
Yeah, shrouded in shadows, like, you know, like governing things from behind the scenes. Now, there's a bit, I'm making that sound a lot more shady than it is. Basically, they're like an internal committee, basically, that, you know, regulates the party. And it was Brady himself who, in 2019, told Theresa May that she had to go after she had survived a vote of no confidence only 6 months before. So he's done this already.
So he might just turn to Boris and say,
"You've got to go."
I mean, the interesting thing is that Boris has faced a number of rebellions throughout his leadership so far, and we know that there's at least 100 people within the Conservative Party who massively disagree with his leadership up until this point.
Well, I think, sorry to interrupt, it was 147 who voted against him.
Oh yes,
in the last vote of no confidence.
That's true, but I think I was referring also to when they were seeing about whether they should continue lockdown restrictions. I think near the end of last year there was the 100 or so Tory rebellion that was going on. So we know for a fact that there's a lot of people within the party that have no confidence with him already. But what this seems to have opened is the floodgates for all those who previously said that they were completely on his side, they were going to back him no matter what. Because Rishi and Sajid, this time last month when this vote of confidence was going on, were saying, and presumably they knew all of this was going on behind the scenes, because in the politicians, I'm not surprised that they're lying about anything. But now, this time last month, they were saying, oh, we've got his back under any circumstances. They've seen this as the perfect opportunity. And it's not anything to do with curtailing civil liberties, destroying the destroying our national culture and heritage, or anything like that.
We're fine with all that.
It's behind basically what is, sadly, obviously it's still a serious situation to have a sex pest in your party, but what is the equivalent of tabloid gossip journalism bringing the party down?
Yeah, I mean, Pinchot hasn't been convicted of anything, if that matters anymore. Yeah. I mean, not that I'm saying I think he's innocent, I think he's not, but it's remarkable that this is the issue. The sex pest. But anyway, the point is, he's done this before. Basically, 6 months after she survived the vote of no confidence, he went up to Theresa May and said, look, you're gone. And she was gone. And because what he had done is said that if she didn't stand down voluntarily, he would simply change the rules to allow another vote of no confidence rather than it being a year. And so that's like, okay, that's quite strong. And so if Boris Johnson doesn't resign, he may well turn up to Boris Johnson and say, look, I'll just change the rules if you don't piss off.
That's a strange amount of power to be vested in one person in this.
Yeah.
Not that I would disagree if he were to say, oh, get lost, Boris, get on your bike. No. But at the same time, that's still a very strange amount of power to be invested in one person.
Yeah. So, and if there was another leadership challenge, they need 54 signatures, more than they had last time, to get rid of him. Boris is in a much weakened position, basically. The political editor of The Spectator, James Forsyth, tweeted out that one senior figure on the 22 committee told him that they now favour a delegation going to tell Boris Johnson that it's over and they'll change the rules if he won't resign. So it looks like Boris is just going to get shuffed out by the 1922 committee. The leader of the chair of the Northern Ireland Select Committee is also moving against him. He says, it will come as no surprise that to those who know me, but I've written to Graham Brady asking for a rule change governing the holding of confidence votes. And so they are basically, you know, there's momentum within the Conservative Party. Just change the structure of the party in order to get rid of Boris, which is quite mad. And the 1922 committee will be meeting tonight to discuss this. So
Stay tuned for tomorrow, I suppose.
Yeah, it looks like tomorrow Boris will probably end up being gone. Needless to say, it's pretty grim in Boris Johnson's office right now.
I can't imagine he's breaking out the bubbly like he was this time last year.
Yeah, they had a meeting and apparently one cabinet minister was like, where are the cyanide pills? So yeah, good question. Another minister said, even some of the boss's most loyal lieutenants could barely look at him. So yeah, this is pretty bad. And so just before the podcast started, in fact, midday today, Parliament Prime Minister's Questions was going on in Parliament. And so we were watching that, and it's in fact still going on, as you can see. Keir Starmer was having a good day today, because, I mean, how could you not? You know, this is gold to Keir Starmer.
Leader of the opposition party is obviously going to revel in this.
Exactly. The Prime Minister's absolutely collapsing. Leader of the opposition party is having a glorious time.
And sadly, it's not like Boris hasn't given him ample ammunition to do so. It's like, you know, I'm not a fan of Keir, but yeah, let him go off. You know, he's probably airing grievances that a lot of us agree with.
Well, the thing is, Keir, Boris was utterly BSing his way through the questions, flailing completely. And Keir Starmer could maintain a very composed, you know, this is just pathetic, Boris, you know, that sort of attitude. And
I mean, if it's right, it's right.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, I despise Keir Starmer for the Blairite shill that he is. But, I mean, he's not wrong. And Boris is getting what he deserves here for being incompetent and getting nothing done. And Boris is sat there going, oh, well, I gave, you know, X amount of billion to Ukraine. And I'm like, bro, that's not helping your case, mate. You know, I gave your money away for foreigners. Aren't I good? No.
I mean, I suppose when he's speaking to a Labour audience, they might all just go, well, I mean, you didn't give enough money away to foreigners, sadly, Boris.
Exactly. But anyway, so Boris is in a much weaker position. You see he's being sat next to him is Nadim Zahawi, who's the new Chancellor of the Exchequer. How long that's going to last if the 1922 committee are going to take Boris out behind the woodshed and shoot him is unknown. But, I mean, so, you know, take anything that he says about anything with a pinch of salt. But he's not an economist, so... But then after Rishi Sunak, who was an economist, how much worse can it get?
And I think the government having official economists is basically just a ruse in the first place, because official economists of this form will just go, yes, I've calculated it using this mathematical model that we should only ever print money.
Yeah.
Always, 24/7.
But the thing is... Yeah, so the thing is, I don't even disagree with the things that he's saying here, though. He's like, well, you know, what we're going to do is, you know, not have caution on public sector pay rises. We look at tax cuts and all this sort of thing. We want fiscal responsibility. And it's like, okay, but where was this energy on day one of Boris's government?
Yeah, where has the fiscal responsibility been?
Yeah, where was this on day one? You know, the last day of Boris's government, and they start saying words like fiscal responsibility.
Oh, finally.
Yeah.
I mean,
late now.
Yesterday, I think Boris announced on his official Twitter that wasn't there going to be a historic tax cut going on today. And I assume that that's been shelved for the time being while they're in damage control mode. But, I mean, it's not going to help like a minor tax cut when everything else is so messed up right now.
Yeah. And he appointed, you know, a new education secretary. But again... You know, who knows how long these people would last. But the thing is, Michelle Donnellan, right? The Guardian's write-up of her, she makes her sound great. And it's like, okay, if the Guardian are giving her a write-up that makes her sound good to me, then she must have been a problem. Why wasn't she there on day one? Apparently, she's basically a culture warrior, and she's happy to get on with culture wars. She's not afraid of taking on the left on their nonsense crusade to ruin our countries. And she's like, yeah, so don't go to university, because you're going to get conned into getting a crap degree that won't make any money. So good, where was that energy on day one? How is that the last day that you start getting half-decent people who've got good points? But anyway, I figured that we'd finish this segment by just showing the absolute worst of left-wing takes on this. Because, I mean, a lot of them are fair, but this one isn't. Nish Kumar, the alleged comedian, balancing out the fact that I can't stand Javid or Sunak with the fact that I love to see a rich white man brought down by Asians.
How very anti-racist of him.
Well, that's exactly right. How very anti-racist of him. But, you know, when someone tells you who they are, I think you should probably believe them. Anyway, that's probably the end of Boris.
Yes. Well, on that note, speaking of parasites and wastes of space who are destroying the country, both culturally and economically.
We're talking about the Conservatives again.
No, in fact, we're talking about those who should be, ideally, in an ideal world, the ideological villains and enemies of the Conservatives, but who the Conservatives and all the establishment have consistently bent over backwards to accommodate. That being protesters like Just Stop Oil, who have been at it again. Now, for the past, I don't even know how long at this point, for the past year, the UK has been constantly beset by a number of non-violent protests that have been going on from climate activists, both from Extinction Rebellion, Insulate Britain, and now Just Stop Oil, who are basically the same people again.
There's actually a collective noun for these people.
Oh, let's hear it.
Middle-class wankstains.
Yes, I agree. and we'll get into how just how accurate that is when we examine who these people are, because every single time it's true. So Just Stop Oil protesters yesterday glued themselves to a Turner painting at the Manchester Art Gallery. And the big one that was the most important one that people paid attention to, because this seems to have been a coordinated attack by a lot of them, because they love using glue to glue themselves to things, and I can only assume that's because if police try and pull them off and it rips the skin, then you can say you've been a victim of police brutality.
Good.
I would absolutely agree. Good. I don't think they go far enough.
Yeah, you
personally
deserve to lose that layer of skin.
Yeah, and the big one that they did was that they glued themselves to the Last Supper, if we go to the next one, John, at the Royal Academy. Now, I think that this is a replica of the original, because the original's in Milan or something. This was a replica painted by Da Vinci's student, but still pretty culturally important, still a masterpiece, still something that we should show some respect to, and not allow these kinds of nutters to get anywhere near.
Honestly, if I was there, I'd find myself very difficult to restrain from conducting direct action against them.
As would I. And you can see them, that it's all very clear who these people are. They're all in Just Stop Oil shirts. And I've just put forward, I don't think loads of people are suggesting that the way to deal with these sorts of nutters is to say, just ignore them. Just let them rot. Just let them rot there. I don't think that's going to work, though. Because they amp up all of their protests to where they're doing stuff like this. I don't think just ignoring them is going to do anything when it will just encourage them to do more daring and outlandish things. We're lucky to
It would be really funny, though, if literally no one cared.
It would
like
be.
They literally, do you not care that we're glued here? No. How long are you going to be there? Well, until you care. Oh, bye then.
Yeah, well, if the people sat on the bench staring at it, just ignore them and kept admiring the painting.
And just, come the end of the day, the gallery just shuts off the lights, closes the locks and doors. It's like, see you tomorrow.
Did anybody bring a packed lunch?
Exactly.
Nope.
Are you going to get to the toilet?
As funny as that would be,
I think that's what we should do.
I don't think it'll work, though, because honestly, I don't see these people being above, like, if nobody's paying attention, literally just getting a knife and starting to rip these paintings apart.
Let them do it. See how that goes.
I mean, it'll end badly for them, but I would rather they not destroy the painting first. I've said that we should just be actively profiling these people, treat these galleries like any other business should, and be like, well, if we can tell that what you're going to do when you get in here is going to be damaging to what we're holding, no, you're just not allowed in here. You're barred for life. If you've got a Just Stop Oil shirt on as soon as you get into a gallery, barred for
essentially
life.
Treat them like terrorists.
Yes, absolutely. Because
cultural terrorists.
They are cultural terrorists on a certain from a certain perspective. And the interesting thing that I'll get into is regarding there's so much criticism of the actual studies that they refer to when they're saying about how it's going to, if we don't do this within this amount of years, where the entire planet's going to set on fire and we're going to be dead and people will starve and other such things. And I've been looking into some of the climate change stuff recently and listening about it. And the IPCC, which is what a lot of these people refer to, the International Panel on Climate Change, their calculations is that basically this whole 1.5 degrees is impossible. There's no way that we can do it. Even if the Paris Climate Agreement was adhered to, we'd still be somewhere in the 2.5 degree zone, except even if we did everything that everybody agreed to in the climate change agreements with the Paris Agreement, the economic damage that would cause that would be caused by that to the world would actually be worse than any sort of than any sort of environmental effects that could come as a result of it. Because, of course, they're asking us to destroy the economy and destroy global supply chains, destroy all of this sort of stuff for the sake of these middle-class wank stains feeling good about themselves and being able to tuck themselves in bed at night and say, like, I've done a good job.
They don't understand that their food is grown by oil. It's oil in the tractors that's growing your food.
Well, they would argue that we need to just find something else to put in the tractors because they're idiots. Well, I'll get
Goodwill.
I'll get into some of their solutions. They also two very clearly overprivileged middle class students came into the National Gallery and glued themselves to the Haywine, or however you're supposed to pronounce it, the Haywine, is it? I think, as you can see. I'll just play the clip, because they say some stuff over the top of it as well.
Art is important. It should be held for future generations to see. But when there's no food, what use is art? When there's no water, what use is art? And when billions of people are in pain and suffering, what use then is art?
This is so weird.
My name is Evan, I'm 22, and I'm a supporter of Just Stop Oil, demanding an end to new licensing of oil and gas.
Didn't notice his name
I
before.
I want to work in the arts, not disrupt them, but the situation we're in means that we have to do everything non-violently possible to prevent the civilizational collapse that we are hurtling towards. We've stuck a reimagined version of the Haywane that shows the destructive nature of our addiction to oil. I first saw this painting when I was at school. It's an important part of our cultural history, our heritage. But it's not more important than the 3.5 billion people already in danger because of the climate crisis.
Moral grandstanding on a ridiculous level to a gallery full of people who probably don't really care about anything they've got to say.
No, but also he's not talking about, like, you know, future generations. What future generations?
Yeah, I mean, these people probably aren't going to have kids,
exactly.
Are they?
Exactly.
I mean, if you want to know what the sort of people that are doing this, that are actively trying to make your life worse, because as we'll get into, these sorts of protests do sadly have an actual effect, and the effect is always negative on the common person. That guy's name that was flashed up on screen there was Eben Lazarus. What kind of... does he sound like a man from working class northern shires? No, he does not.
I was going to say, I don't think he was christened that, but then... If he was christened that, he's certainly not from the working class.
I don't know. Poshos have very strange names. There's a real truth in the meme of, like, it's Tarquin going off to his climate protests. And then there was this one that I found on...
Can I just point out, this guy looks a lot like Ted Kaczynski.
You know, he actually does.
He looks really similar, right?
Casper Hughes, question mark. Where's Uncle Ted nowadays?
He's in jail at the moment, dying of cancer, I'm afraid.
Ah, fair play. But he had something to say on this as well, to explain. This is one of the guys...
Ted Kaczynski would probably agree with them as well.
He probably would.
Industrial society and its consequences.
He would probably say, oh yeah, you're not going... Yeah. Only gluing yourself to these paintings.
Non-violent.
This is chump change, son. What are you thinking?
You're not going to enact real change that way.
Well, sadly, Ted would be wrong, because these people, through their protests, have enacted some kind of real change, or at least influenced... real change. So this guy is talking, one of the guys who glued himself to the Last Supper. Let's hear what he has to say about this as well.
My name is Casper Hughes. Today I'm going to glue myself to the Last Supper, a 15th century painting at the Royal Academy, along with four other people. This is non-violent direct action to try and get our government to stop issuing new fossil fuel licences immediately. I've got a 15-year-old son, and his future is looking increasingly hellish. He probably won't live to a ripe old age if we carry on as we are. And middle age onwards for him will be full of rape, famine, war, disease. It's going to be utterly hellish.
Too, you know.
The Chatham House report released last year said that there will be a 50% chance of simultaneous multiple breadbasket failures in the 40s. That means we could be facing a famine that could be measured in hundreds of millions or worse in 20 years' time.
typical sort of stuff we've come to expect from this massive doom-mongering. The future for my son will be full of rape.
But, well, yeah.
this is some strange fantasy land that you've concocted.
So we're gonna experience multiple famines, which may well happen. How is reducing our food production capacity by stopping oil going to help that? We use oil to make the food.
They're basically arguing that short-term famines now to avoid long-term famines in the future. And not just famines, but also just the cost of living crisis, the energy crisis, everything else that the government has capitulated to, which has caused what we're doing right now. And I did look into the Chatham House report just to take a look through it quickly. And it's basically the kind of fear-mongering, doom-speak, death cultism that you would expect from this sort of thing. It uses language like, no region will be spared from the chaos, which doesn't really make me think that you are a neutral arbiter of scientific information when you're putting across this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it says that, you know, by the 2040s, the top four maize-producing countries have a 50% chance of synchronous crop failure, which is what will supposedly cause all of this disaster with famine and such. And now, for YouTube, I'm not going to deny the science, but I am going to squint my eyes and furrow my brow very hard at it, because we've had these kinds of predictions for decades.
Yes.
Just go back to Al Gore, we should all be underwater by now, and go back to the 1970s, we should all be encased in ice right now.
Yeah.
All sorts of things are supposed to have happened that didn't. So I'm not going to believe this sort of stuff. And I also actually contrasted this by looking at NASA's predictions of similar sorts of things. And what they were saying is that even if these effects on maize production do happen, because of changes in the climate, it would actually increase production elsewhere of wheat and other such things. Because shockingly enough, different produce is affected differently by changes in the climate. So we could make up for whatever breadbasket failures happen in other areas.
And also imagine if, like, you know, the vast stretches of Russia and Canada become arable.
That would be incredible.
That's a lot of land that's currently under permafrost.
Mm. And I also took a look through Just Stop Oil's manifesto. And of course, what are they asking for to be able to hit these targets? Well, they're asking for increased government intervention.
Of course they are.
Because that's always worked every single time. I mean, just ask the USSR and the CCP how well government intervention worked in food production. And they also say that the government, as a result of this increased government intervention, we need the government to be guided by citizens' assemblies, which is the exact same thing that Extinction Rebellion and Insulate Britain advocated for.
It's exactly the same thing the French revolutionaries were advocating for.
Exactly. And the thing is, isn't it very, very convenient that this obvious power grab that they're trying to advocate for here is just veiled with the veneer of respectability due to, oh, I just care about the climate, bro.
Yeah.
I just care about the climate, bro. You don't want the planet to explode, you're going to have to put me in charge of the government, bro. It's the only way to do it. And they argue that the IPCC isn't fear-mongering enough. They say, oh, you're far too conservative on this. What, you think the planet's going to explode by 2040? You need to bump that number up, mate.
And yeah, the planet exploded in 2009, like Al Gore told us.
And they also say that we need to halt all flights immediately. And
let's hear them out.
Yeah, well,
imagine how little immigration would happen if we halted all flights immediately.
I mean, it'd be easier to get rid of the boats, seeing as there would be the armada of boats crossing the channel at that point. And but that will be a little bit ironic when we look into one of the co-founders of Just Stop Oil. But they also point to lots of climate and economic disasters, which more often than not are caused by the protests being successful, leading to the cancellation of major energy products. And then they use those problems that they've caused as further evidence for why we need to cut down energy projects. And they call for more renewable electrics, despite them being powered by coal, which is, I think, worse for the atmosphere and greenhouse emissions than oil is.
If they were promoting nuclear power stations at the same time, maybe I'd be able to agree with them.
Oh, perhaps, but they're not.
No.
Because, of course, these death cultists don't want to acknowledge that nuclear exists or is a good thing.
Yeah, I know. It's really weird, isn't it? Like, nuclear power is so obviously the correct way to generate electricity in the modern era, but But Germany's like, yeah, so we're going to shut all that down and rely on Russia. It's like, what? Why? Yeah.
Well, not just rely on Russia. I mean, we've seen a lot of the effects of having to rely on foreign countries, but an article from Michael Schellenberger also referenced saying, as a result of all of this, foreign nations benefit from rising oil and gas prices. Saudi Aramco recently increased investment in exploration and production by $8 billion. So, of course, we are trying to benefit from the lack of investments by major players in the market, its CEO said. So we're just empowering the Saudis, which we want to be reliant on the Saudis, don't we? Very trustworthy people. Mm. And I thought I'd point over here to an article from John that came out back in January, talking about when science becomes faith. Because, of course, a lot of the studies that go into this with the Chatham House and other such thing are based on mainstream science. But it's important to remain sceptical of the mainstream science, because John points out in here that gatekeeping is an institutional part of science. Because, you know, gatekeeping, as you discussed recently, can be a very good thing, but it can also be a bad thing when it's, for instance, gatekeeping the correct opinions on things. And he goes,
when it comes to something like science, you need to have the plurality of opinions.
Yeah, you need to have a certain amount of people who are going to go against the grain and try and prove you wrong, because that's the whole scientific method.
That is, read Thomas Kuhn's Structure of Scientific Revolutions, and that's how it's always been done. There's a dominant paradigm that marginalizes critics, and eventually the critics become so numerous and obviously right that it essentially overturns the existing paradigm, and then you get a new one that again silences its critics, and eventually they become so numerous and obviously right that it sweeps back and forward like this. Like, it's not like the rational process everyone wants to pretend that it is.
Well, of course not. I mean, John refers to the structure of scientific revolutions in this article.
Oh, right. Okay. I haven't actually read this article.
And what it actually does as well is it conforms to the iron law of oligarchy as well, where the small cabal of people who end up being the trendsetters, the ones with the correct opinions, are the ones that everybody else has to conform to. Where he says science cultists end up orientating themselves around false beliefs with fanatical certainty, and it's then imperative that discourse be controlled to preserve those beliefs, exactly how you're talking about.
Yeah.
And a good example of this as well, to point to another article from us that came out recently that you're able to access if you've got a premium account, and if you go on, if you get a silver account or above, you'll be able to access the audio track, is Connor's recent article on the academic attack on English literature, where he refers to this kind of academic gatekeeping that you'd see in science, where he talks about how he wrote an essay on Simone de Beauvoir's, as he refers to it, Tome of Tosh, The Second Sex, and how that was met by criticism by one pseudonymized assessor who said that he had threatened the ideas they had based their career on, and this they couldn't take Connor seriously beyond the first paragraph. And if you wonder if you wonder why all of the climate science seems to confirm to this one very strict doom-mongering kind of framework, it's probably because anything that gets put forward that distances itself from that probably gets that sort of response, sadly enough. So just a reminder to always stay skeptical. But interestingly, Daily Mail have done some expose journalism into the people behind Just Stop Oil, finding that some of them are community organizers, the sorts of people that you would expect.
Communists.
Communists, obviously. One of them who moaned that attending meetings to claim benefits was getting in the way of his activism. Because apparently, the meetings where he gets benefits get in the way of his activism. When you think about that, that means that the government, by paying this man benefits in the first place, is subsidizing his public disruptions.
This is one of the reasons I hate benefits.
Yes, absolutely. It's ridiculous. And the sorts of people that are involved in this, one of them, Miss Porter, was previously arrested for scaling a roof of Barclaycard's headquarters and dousing the building in paint and letting off flares during a disruptive protest in 2019. I mean, they want to claim themselves as non-violent, but the amount of actual damage that could be done to people if you got caught in something like that would be less than non-violent. But interestingly, if we go to the next one, they've done a look into the Just Stop Oil co-founder, Hannah Hunt, which I think is one of those two middle-class Wankstein teenagers.
Right.
Who were at the, The Mayhane? That painting.
So I can see the privilege dripping off them.
I know, but I'll just read a little bit about this because it goes to show the hypocrisy of the people organizing these protests and the hypocrisy of their demands for the rest of the public. The whole climate responsibility for thee but not for me attitude. They say she glued herself to the priceless artwork, has been accused of being a jet-setting sailor who has racked up tens of thousands of air miles. Student Hannah Hunt, of course she's a student.
How does she get the money for all of this?
I wonder where, perhaps from daddy.
I guess it must be.
Yes, she's 23, co-founder of Just
from
Stop
Brighton,
Oil.
From Brighton, is she?
Yeah, she is from Brighton.
Oh, what a shock.
Oh, and Rory just wanted to me to remind everybody that Brighton is possibly the worst place in the UK. It's full of these sorts of people. It's full of middle-class Tarquins and Hannah Hunts who all want to ruin your lives so they can feel better about themselves.
They can feel less guilty about all of the air miles they've racked up going on exotic holidays.
Yeah, it must be it. She's the co-founder of Just Stop Oil. Social media pages are filled with exotic holiday pictures like the one on screen. I'm sure that this boat was powered by wind, maybe powered by solar panels, and she's got exotic holiday pictures from Bali, Australia, and the Canary Islands. You know, Australia is quite a ways away, so that's quite a long
flight.
Costs
a lot of money to go to Australia.
It really does. Yeah. And they calculate if Miss Hunt flew to every destination, she would have clocked up 49,404 air miles. I think that's more than I've got in my entire life over 5 years, and has been responsible for the emissions of at least 13 tons of carbon dioxide. And the European average per person is 8.4 tons for a whole year, but that is taking into account driving and everything else that you'll be doing with your life, not purely from air miles.
It's one rule for the privileged, isn't it?
Yep. It's not known if the eco-activist chose to offset the carbon from her flights.
Of course she did.
I doubt it. And her father runs an environmental consultancy firm, and her family purchased an early 20th century property on the west coast of Scotland that has one of the lowest possible energy efficiency ratings available.
But I just love this. Like, her dad's making bank out of being an environmental consultant. Amazing.
Of course, and she feels the need to get involved in the grift, I can only assume. But this is all just to point out that these people are not the representatives of the common people. These are the most privileged and insufferable in society who want to make an impact because they can't live up to daddy's legacy and feel terribly guilty about accepting all of his money for these fancy holidays. And this is why no one cares when these people do this sort of thing beyond the obvious disruption in the day-to-day life. They care about the disruption. They don't care about the actual cause because people care about the cost of living and the energy crisis. They don't care about the environment really when it comes down to it because it's so nebulous.
Well, and these people are so inauthentic.
Yeah.
Like they're not people who are like struggling and who are genuinely concerned or anything like that. No, they're jet-setting spoiled brats. Yeah.
They're not even setting a good example.
Yeah, exactly.
To Just Stop Oil, I ask of you, why should we care when you so obviously don't? Not really. Anyway, let's move on to the next segment. So I've also got a segment here on why corporate America is adult daycare. Now, this might be referring to some things that you've seen going around on social media recently. I don't think you've seen any of this.
No, I haven't.
So it should be very interesting because I'm going to be looking at a particular woman's TikTok, which has been going around for demonstrating just the state of corporate America, because it is a good insight into the lifestyles of people, especially in tech, in big metropolitan cities like Chicago, where this woman is based. Just to make sure as well, don't dogpile on this woman or anything. I'm not criticizing necessarily her personally. I'm just saying that, you know, the lifestyle that she leads and the lifestyle of these corporate tech types is very telling.
If anything, she's actually done us a service by showing us what it's actually like on the inside of these places. So don't go and...
And when I tell you how much she earns, please don't get angry.
Yeah.
Please, try not to. But first, I'd just like to draw your attention to a premium live hangout that we did last night. It was you and our guest, Luke Avery, talking about the wisdom of songs.
Yeah, the Song of Solomon. It's remarkable how it feels really out of place. It's one of the books of the Bible, but it's not religious. And it's actually really interesting when you look at the way that people's relationships are now. There's something that has been taken, is the best way to say it. Like, there's a sort of depth of feeling to it between, like, it's a romance between two people that you just can't imagine now. You know, it's just such an archaic and like out of time thing that it's just remarkable to go back and study it. But anyway, that was what that was about.
Yeah,
good.
That sounds very nice. It's always good to have Luke in. He's always got a very interesting insight into these things. And I think that old-fashioned romance and romanticism is something that we should all try to reintroduce into our lives.
But there's also timeless observations about the differences between men and women that are embedded within the text that we go through. It's really interesting.
Of course, I think if you're going to try and be romantic to a woman, you should probably understand what a woman is in the first place.
And the differences between men and women. And
yeah, how else are you going to appeal to a woman if you don't? Mm. Anyway, check that out if you're interested. Really good content, and I would recommend it. Let's go on. So this is the first thing that I saw regarding this. This person called Cold on Twitter found this TikTok talking about a day in the life of a 22-year-old in tech in Chicago. And it raised a few eyebrows from a few people, because a few people just were very, myself included, were very surprised just at the level of indulgence.
Bourgeois indulgence.
Yes, yeah. That goes on in these companies. Now, this woman works for LinkedIn, and I'll tell you a little bit more about her in a moment after we watch this clip.
Today was one of those days where you leave for work at 7 a.m. and you don't get back until past midnight. I left for work early for a 9 a.m. meeting that was conveniently canceled right beforehand. But luckily, I got to the lobby and there were these eucalyptus towels waiting for me, which is really nice, and some fresh orange water, which I of course took before taking the elevator up to the office. I grabbed some breakfast, normal oatmeal and chia seed pudding, and we finally got LinkedIn mugs in the office, which I'm so excited about, and prepped some LinkedIn content. Then I found out that the wall art that we have in the office is made out of recycled trees from Chicago, which was so cool, fun fact. And then it was time for our company all hands, so I grabbed our drink of the day, which is a blackberry mojito, and headed downstairs to the all hands room with some of my coworkers. There weren't that many people there, but listen to them sing Mamma Mia. Anyways, we love that song. We grabbed some lunch because we were starving after that. There was this cool little dish, and I grabbed a chai latte before heading to work. Watched some of my coworkers play ping pong. And then tried out a new quiet room, which is a really nice area to just like relax and unplug from work. Then it was time to buckle down. I had to get certified in our new marketing lab certification on LinkedIn, so I did that and just like sat in our focus area for a while. I grabbed a snack after I was hungry, and then I finished off the rest of my work before getting an email announcing the next team that I'll be joining through my BLP program. It was really exciting news. I'm going to be joining a marketing team.
What work?
Yeah,
I finished on my work. What did you do?
Everyone was asking, what is it that you do exactly? Her entire day.
It's literally like office space. So what is it you say you actually do here?
Well, she prepped some LinkedIn content was the most I got from that.
So she copied and pasted a text document to the webpage, right?
Exactly. Well, the thing is that is her full day of work. That's not the end of the video itself, because the rest of it...
What a stress-free life she leads.
I know. She was saying, it's one of those days where you wake up really early and then you get back after midnight. Do you know what she did with the rest of her day after that in the video?
She didn't go out drinking, did she?
She did go out drinking with all of her friends. What stress? What difficulty? The fact that she's like, the first thing that happened was the meeting I was in got cancelled, so I don't have to do that. Then I sit around, do a little bit of...
So what did she do for that hour, you know?
Like... Yeah. Do a little bit of LinkedIn content... And then I sat around watching my mates in the ping pong table room.
Went in the quiet room for a while and pretended that I was in nature. Yeah. And then got some lunch, got a mojito, whatever. Yeah.
Rubbed my fingers against these recycled tree boards. That's known as wood. Wood is recycled tree. This table we're sat at is made from recycled tree. Where did you find it, Carl? Incredible. Oh my God, this recycled sand you've got on it as well is
amazing.
Absolutely fantastic. She's getting free snacks and towels. Meetings apparently are just optional in attendance, because she went to that meeting, which just seemed to be people singing Mamma Mia.
Yeah, and like, what was that meeting about? How was that a necessary part of the day?
The interesting is, I'm not going to, expose anyone, but I've kind of worked in a job similar to this before, not quite as, highbrow and fancy as LinkedIn, to the point where they can just give you free orange water and towels that you can wipe yourself with when you come in, because apparently getting around Chicago... Getting around Chicago would get me in a sweat as well, actually, just from the nerves. going around any corner. But yeah, it's very strange, but I've worked in a similar kind of job before, where most of your work that you do each day is kind of pretending to do work, And then you just take meeting after meeting after meeting. So even if you have work to do, the first half of your day will be filled up with three meetings, which take up 4 hours, making it very difficult to actually get anything done with any real efficiency. But then the work that you're doing is so labor-free in the first place. That
hard to identify as work.
Yeah, that you barely have to do anything in the first place. But just to say, not everyone who works in tech is going to lead a lifestyle exactly like this, where it's going to be as easy. But this does not set a fantastic example. And I looked into this, right, because I went through her TikTok, and I've got a few videos to play, but I did I found some relevant information for that. She's in a business leadership marketing program at LinkedIn. And she is an intern. Would you like to guess how much she earns an hour?
I want to say $25 an hour.
Actually, $24. So very, very close. Okay. $24 an hour for that. Though. Except she gets bonuses and comprehensive packages for this internship, which bump up her annual salary a bit. Go on, give her annual salary a go. You can guess.
I don't know. $60,000.
$70,000.
God damn it.
$70,000 to do that.
To do what?
Exactly.
What do you do around here?
I will say, being that she's in marketing, this might be a stealth campaign to try and encourage people to move to Chicago and start working at LinkedIn, because honestly, that seems like the easiest job imaginable.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the rest of her TikTok is filled with, oh, if you want to get into the sort of job that I've done, you need to have this qualification, you need to have done this degree, you need to go have gone through all of these. So it's not going to be, and plus she says that her page is not affiliated with LinkedIn.
Well, it's a private page.
It's a private page. So it might be a stealth marketing campaign just to throw off that criticism, first of all. But at the same time, this is absolutely how these people's days go. And there's this other one where her only work in this one is to supervise a film shoot behind the scenes, which, having done that sort of thing in the past, means you sit there and every so often someone turns to you and goes, Is it looking all right? And you go, yeah, it's looking fine to me. And that's the work. And then the rest of her day is spent going on a marketing dinner with people. And I understand.
Part of life, isn't it?
I understand that networking and forming business relationships is part of the whole, is part of the daily grind for this. But like you said, it's hardly hard work. And then there's this next one that I found where she's talking about the spirit of well-being, where LinkedIn just gives everyone a day off each month for their mental well-being, because apparently the job is so stressful and so difficult. Yeah.
My mental well-being, I just feel so much, under so much pressure.
Yeah, I don't actually think that, like, certain businesses that probably will be ridiculously stressful probably would be nice to give their employees a day off, maybe randomly once a month, just to let them relax and unwind a little bit. This is not that job. This is not the job that needs that.
There's something about this that is, I mean, everything about her life is artificial, right? Like, it's all curated. It's, you know, the glass and steel buildings, the curated park that she goes around, the little ducks, all of the brands, the fashion, all the, it just feels like the last days of empire, right?
It really
like,
does.
These are the sort of the perfect ones from the Mouse Utopia who are living just before the complete collapse. That's all I'm seeing here.
Oh, no, and I do have some comments on that that I'll get to towards the end, which I think will elaborate on it and sort of agree with you broadly there. But the next one that I got up was this one where she's talking about this work trip to the LinkedIn headquarters. And just play this clip.
Buckle up, because this week I went to LinkedIn's headquarters in Sunnyvale, California. This is my first ever work trip, and I was here for an offsite with my team. So I checked into my hotel and looked at the rooms. This hotel was so nice. They even have Dyson hair dryers, and not gonna lie, it almost slipped into my suitcase. So after unpacking, I got ready pretty fast for our first dinner. This was the welcome event, and we got to meet everyone on my team in person for the first time. We all got a personalized goodie bag filled with swag, like a team sweatshirt, and random fidget stuff to use throughout the meeting this week. And this cute little mug. And I posted about the hotel on my Instagram story, and when I came home, I had the cutest handwritten note left for me, and a little mini Theragun, which I used, of course, because my legs were so sore.
You just get free stuff. You already get paid a ridiculous amount with benefits.
Oh, my legs were so sore. Yeah, sure they were.
From all that sitting down, eating food. You know everything about sore legs. I mean, honestly, and it's very strange to me that it was at this work meeting to the LinkedIn headquarters, the first time that she's meeting all of her team members in person. That just seems like a really weird disconnect to me.
That's fine. That makes sense. But I'm just looking at these. Essentially, these people are like domestic pets, they're like domestic animals, where they're just, you know, they've got everything they need provided to them, right? Everything is just provided to them, and they don't really do anything, and they're sat there like as ornaments, almost. You know, it's so weird.
What it reminds me of is American Psycho, because legitimately, one of the things that I found interesting watching that film most recently was that Patrick does no work. Yeah. In the whole film, all you ever see him do is sit, when he's at work, is sit around in his office listening to music, doodling. And apparently, all these people do when they're at work is sit around in offices designed to make you feel nice and calm and eat free food and free snacks that are provided to you.
But look, it's just the way that everything's, it feels fake, right? Like, all of the people, like, they don't feel authentic, and they don't feel like, you know, they've got like real human connections and things like this, and everything is laid on for them, and so they're in this very curated life.
Yeah, it's very clear to me that it's no wonder that a lot of these people, because we know that a lot of these big tech companies are where a lot of the social justice and progressivism is coming from. And to me, when I look at this, it's no wonder. When your life is so hollow and so empty and devoid of meaning.
All of these comforts are provided to you. You know, you didn't go and get these yourself. No. Someone has provided you with these comforts. And so you're at the center of this network of things that are providing you with, you know, good things. That you are just a pet. Mm. You are literally a pet.
So to me, I mean, for
how would you survive outside of this environment?
I know. And how at the same time, John's branded them corporate economic parasites, which...
No. They're corporate economic... pets. They're not parasites, they're pets.
Yeah, so no one...
Well, sure, but that's LinkedIn's problem.
Yeah, but surely, like I say, it's no wonder these people get involved in progressive causes, because a lot of progressivism...
What else are you gonna do?
If it goes back to Marxism, it's like, well, how are you going to claim that you're exploited? I mean, honestly, how could you claim
workers
that you're exploited?
Workers of the world, well, what work have you done?
Yeah, so no wonder they latch themselves onto these virtue signaling movements, because the likelihood is these people probably aren't planning on having kids at all because they're all indulging in the progressive ideology. So it's like, well, what am I going to have to leave an impact on the world? I know, my activist protests, but my activism.
Even if they had kids, what life lessons would they teach them?
Well, what hardship have they been
through? Exactly.
It's very strange. Because people, when she was talking about the education that she went through to be able to get into a position like this, a load of people in the comments were calling her out. Oh, if you went to this university, you must have had rich parents to be able to do
this.
Well,
undoubtedly.
Yeah, so they've basically just replaced their rich parents with LinkedIn.
With the corporation that's going to provide them with everything their parents use.
Yeah, and you're not even having to do the same level of work that you do if you're at home doing chores, you know?
They've never done chores, come on. You didn't grow up in a household with a
They've maid. Never been asked to do the gardening. They've never been asked to even empty the dishwasher.
Yeah.
And then the next...
They get prawn platters.
Yeah, the next clip is...
It's not the same life you and I have led, Harry.
No, it certainly is not. I'm from the north, where it's grim up north.
It never used to be there was a minimum wage, right? In the late 90s, there wasn't a minimum wage. And I had a job. I was living in Cornwall at the time, working in like cleaning nightclubs. And so I've cleaned toilets for like £3 an hour before.
That must have felt dignified.
Well, I mean, it was just it was
a job. It's a job. You get on with it.
You got on with it. You made money, and it really disabused you of any notions that women were like more clean than men.
Oh, it really does. I mean, I've worked in pubs and had to do similar things. You know, after the Saturday night. Oh, I guess it's time to clean up for Sunday, and you get given things to scrub the toilet with.
Yeah, but they would act like I'd been oppressed or something. They would consider this a form of, you know, oppression. It's like, well, no, it was just that they were the jobs that were going.
I mean, I suppose comparatively, maybe.
It wasn't oppression.
It wasn't oppression, but like...
It just wasn't luxury.
Yeah, from their point of reference, then, you must have been like the Russian serf or something.
Yeah, that's how they'd look at it, yeah.
Yeah, and there's this one which goes to show, if you play this clip, it'll show that Google is pretty much the exact same as well.
In the morning at Google Chicago office with me. Vivian and I are both women in tech, so we toured each other's offices today. Oh, it was a lazy Friday morning, so I Ubered to West Loop to Google's office. And it was a beautiful day out. I got there finally. Here's my badge, got a flex, and we immediately headed upstairs to the cafe. I will say their food looked a lot better than our office. The kombucha overflowed, but I got some chai tea, and we headed back down to sit down, and take our meetings for the morning. One thing Google also has on us is their view. It's beautiful. So after a morning full of meetings, we had our first mini lunch of the day. I literally just grabbed some potatoes because, you know, a girl's gotta eat. Yum. Say hi to Vivian eating her shepherd's pie. We checked out the game room where you could even use the claw to grab free Google swag. Pretty cool. And there's an actual game, like, Xbox room, which is even cooler. We don't have that at LinkedIn. And I played some basketball and made my first shot.
Hard life.
I know, very difficult. I've got to say, when she goes through these rundowns of all of these various drinks and foods that she's eating in these places, it's just completely foreign to me. She might as well be speaking French because it's like, never heard of that, never heard of that. All of that in those drawers, Trident gum that you can just pick up, like, that's just foreign to me.
Such a privileged life.
Yeah, But once again, it seems even at Google that her friend who took her along to do this doesn't have much to do.
Yeah.
It seems much the same. Like, all of these jobs seem to be completely interchangeable with just varying degrees of luxury.
But I can't help but notice we're not hearing from the male engineers who underwrite the actual structure of the tech giants. Like, we're not hearing from the code monkeys who presumably spend, like, you know, 12 hours a day coding at their desks.
Yeah, right? I wonder if they're getting 70 grand a year.
Yeah, well, they're probably getting more, to be fair, but, like, they're the ones who are actually doing the work.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. The level of pay-to-work ratio between them is going to be somewhat suspect.
Absolutely, you know, there's no way they're only doing twice as much work as these women to get twice their pay.
There was another clip where it's just very strange that I was going to play, but I think I've made the point pretty clearly of what goes on in these buildings. The only other thing that the next clip was going to display was the fact that for some reason, apparently in LinkedIn, you can just bring your friends into the office.
Yeah, social club.
For no particular... You don't need to play the clip, John. I think I've made it clear enough. But as well as all this, it shows to me that these companies, Google, LinkedIn, all of these big tech giants, have such an enormous level of bloat and inefficiency in their business model. So I expect it may not, you know, they probably wouldn't collapse entirely, but if it weren't for massive support that these companies get from the state and subsidies and such, they probably wouldn't be able to just employ people to sit around and do nothing, or they might have to restructure it a little bit. Because the article that I got up for this next, John, if we go over. Thank you, was just about how all of these tech companies receive massive subsidies, including Tesla got $54 billion. Google's parent company, Alphabet, got $766 million since 2000. And Alphabet obviously owns Google. LinkedIn is owned by Microsoft. They don't have any details on Microsoft, but Microsoft is in bed with the government. Obviously, they're going to be getting massive subsidies. And as far as I'm aware, this is basically corporate welfare so that the corporations can put overprivileged, upper-middle-class brats on an extended form of welfare.
I don't even know if it's fair to call them brats, because they're not doing anything wrong. Like, you know, they're not like the protesters.
Oh, yeah.
But these are like just literally people who... The concept of freedom would actually be terrifying for them. Because it means they wouldn't be able to get their chai latte in the morning and their orange water and their eucalyptus towel.
Yeah, right? If the government went smaller, my big company might not get all this money from the government, so they might not be able to give me all these freebies wherever I go.
Like, these people are literally domesticated. I just find it incredible.
Yeah, like I say, I'm not doing this to dunk on this particular woman. She's only 22 years old, so she obviously doesn't know any better and has never experienced any real hardship in her life.
She probably doesn't know the rest of the world isn't like this, you know?
No.
But again, thank you to her for showing us what it's like to be a young woman working in tech.
Yes.
They're so oppressed.
I know, very much so.
The patriarchy's really holding you down.
Yeah, but that's all I've got for that one. But thank you very much for letting us know what it's like on the other side when you are able to burst through that glass ceiling, presumably.
Good luck.
Anyway, let's go on to the video comments, eh?
So, ever since the Muslim attacked those guys in Oslo and killed a couple, Norwegian media has been all over Christians, asking church leaders and pastors why they wouldn't support or walk in pride parades and stuff. And I think that's strange. Muslim leaders haven't been asked to walk in pride parade.
Yeah, they don't ask the people at the mosques, do they?
No, they never do.
They're really weird.
He is the self-appointed queen of the sausage roll, intergalactic sex pot, non-binary icon in the making. Fat Butcher is Birmingham's queen of disco and amyl nitrate.
Yes, I'm gay! Big fat gay! Well, thank you very much. You've ruined my whole plan. I had it all worked out. I was going to become a martyr for the cause, like a modern-day Graham Norton.
That's a good point.
It is sadly true. I mean, I think it might have been Sophie made a meme the other day of that person that you were talking about, the insufferable LBC presenter who was like, it so offends me when people say they don't care about my sexuality. And they cut in him just going, I'm gay. No one cares.
Yeah, literally.
Oh, that's nice.
Don't care. Yeah.
So I wanted to ask this question on Monday, which was my birthday, but I was in Vermont with no signal, so now that I'm finally back home, I can upload questions again. So as you know, the American public schooling system is pretty garbage, which is why what a lot of Americans know about the Revolutionary War basically comes down to the movie The Patriot by Mel Gibson. So I'm asking, have you guys seen that movie, and if so, what do you think of the way the British are portrayed in that movie? If you haven't seen that movie, I'd really love to get your guys' reaction to it, because I've always wanted to know how the British would feel about how the British are portrayed in The Patriot. Looking forward to that.
Have you seen it?
I've not actually watched The Patriot.
I haven't seen it, but I've seen clips from it. And the thing that bothers me about it is that the British are portrayed as incompetent. That's the thing that bothers me.
I mean, the British typically, back then, maybe now, but back then would not have been particularly incompetent, I'd imagine.
No, they were excellent.
Of course. We had an empire for a reason,
yeah,
after
exactly.
all.
Yeah, exactly. We ruled the world for a reason. Yeah, the only I haven't seen the film, but I mean, I don't mind us being portrayed as, you know, the arch villains. That's fine.
Mm.
Yeah, Cope.
I'm sure from many other cultures we are.
Yeah, exactly. You know, big Cope. But the thing that I get annoyed about is portraying us as incompetent. It's like, no, sorry, we used to kick everyone's asses. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Used to.
Also, happy birthday to you.
Yes, happy birthday. I really enjoyed watching you making that thing, by the way.
Yeah, in fact, actually, when you post these videos, you seem to be making lots of boxes or
shelves,
something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but could you elaborate on what you're
doing?
That's
what he does for his job, actually.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
fair
yeah.
play. That makes sense.
Like, when he first started doing it, I was like, yeah, dude, I love watching just things getting made in
it
high speed.
It is fascinating,
isn't
it? I
don't know why.
I think it appeals to male monkey brain.
No, I really think it is. It's just like literally like male monkey brain, where it's just like thing being built. That good.
It's like when you see like someone digging a hole or something.
Yeah.
You just walk up, it's like, what are you digging for?
Yeah.
Need any help with that, buddy?
Man, my two sons, whenever there's some sort of machinery in operation, they're just like, wow.
Yeah, my granddad used to amaze me because in his shed, he had a drill that he used to, and I used to be entertained for hours whenever they picked me up from school before my parents had finished work. I would just be there just like, wow, just the drill.
My youngest is 19 months old now, and whenever a plane flies over, he's just like, ugh, like the whole thing.
Oh, that must be adorable.
No, it really is. And he, like, the other day, we're in the kitchen, and I'm holding him, and I can hear a plane going outside, but you can't see it. And he's pointing outside into the sky. He doesn't know where it is, but he can just hear the plane. He's like, no, Dad, look, plane. You know, he can't speak yet, but you can tell what he's saying. It's definitely the male monkey brain, man.
So I find one of the most interesting case studies in the dichotomy of happiness is the allure of video games, because they are a pleasure masquerading as fulfillment. Typically, you spend time and effort working to earn new skills, unlock levels, and obtain items, which are typical hallmarks of fulfillment. But while these may give you a sense of accomplishment, none of your in-game achievements will translate to meaningful impact in your real life. And once you've completely beaten the game, the only thing that's left for you to do is go back to the beginning, start over, and play it again. Another taste of sugar from the bowl.
That's totally true.
It is true.
This is one of the reasons I actually don't play many video games at all anymore.
Honestly, sad as it, I have not played video games for at least a few months at this point, just because I've been spending so much time outside of work dealing with other things, or just reading, trying to improve my knowledge.
Yeah, I'm not judging. It's just that, like, I've found myself being like, you know, that was just a waste of time. And even, like, you know, doing something else, like painting my Warhammer miniatures or something, at least at the end of it, I have a thing. There's a solid thing that lasts that I have, you know, done.
Yeah.
Even if it's nonsense, you know, it's still something that's not just a video game.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. We're not judging anybody. I would like to have more time to just sit down and play video games, because I think the best thing to do is to just recognize that it's just playing games. It's a pastime. It's something to unwind. Yeah, I think that's sort of...
totally valid. You've had a hard day at work.
Yeah, unwinding can be a very positive thing in itself. The only thing that I would say from video games that ever did inspire me to do something beneficial outside of it really was when I... was inspired to pick up a real guitar when I used to play Guitar Hero 3. And guitar as an instrument is a very good thing to learn.
Yeah,
it taught me a lot of self-discipline and helped me to express myself a bit better. Yeah, it's a skill that I can use outside of just the video game, but that's the only real example I can think of.
But yeah, like you're saying, if you know, you're at work all day, you do 10 hours actually working, not LinkedIn.
I mean, you've got bloody video games there already for
exactly,
you.
Yeah. But you get home and you want to play a game for a few hours. That's totally understandable. You've totally earned it. Mm. You know, that's fine. But like, I'm thinking of when I was younger and I used to just play video games all day and do nothing. It's like, that's terrible.
I can think of the days that I've wasted doing
that. You know, I'm kind of annoyed by it. But anyway.
The most interesting thing about Campus Saints isn't even the mass migration. It's actually its depiction and articulation of an early idea of the cathedral, although in the book it was called The Beast. It shows how pretty much every institution of the modern society has basically been turned against the productive, law-abiding members of society in favor of left-wing degenerates. Most of the destruction at the end of the book isn't even done by the mass migrant boat people. It's being done by the third generation migrants who have grown up hating all the Western peoples and basically left-wing Antifa types.
Yeah, that makes sense. I keep saying I need to read it because Douglas Murray references it in Strange Death of Europe, and ever since I read that his excerpts from it, I thought, oh, I should give that a read. We might need to give it a read and do a book club on it or something.
I've heard it's quite controversial.
Well, it's quite controversial, but it came out in the 70s and seems to have predicted the mass migration that happened, so it could be interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, Lone Cedars. A bit of a white pill for you in this crazy housing market, especially in where. My fiance and I actually are buying a house. We finally got a house in a small town just outside the city, about 700 people, as well as if this happens to air on Wednesday, it just so happens to be my birthday today. So, gents, you can make it. I got a house, I'm getting married in September, and it's my birthday. So, hey, not all is bad.
Hey, well, happy birthday to you, and congratulations on all that.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah, it's nice to see that something good's going well for someone.
Mm.
Hey, Lotus Eaters. By the time you hear this, then my sister and I will be embarking on our journey from British Columbia to Saskatchewan, over 1,500 kilometers or 950 miles, about three times the distance from London to Edinburgh, to meet up with our immediate family and our relatives. Should I time-lapse the road or try and spot anything particularly beautiful or eye-catching along the way and make those into clips?
I like the idea of some notable and beautiful landmarks. That sounds good to me.
I have bats in the Undercroft.
Oh.
Very nice.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
We've got like a beehive.
Oh, do you?
No, not we. Us.
Oh, here. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
If you go outside, you can see that there are bees that like...
Like, oh, yeah, I've had this pointed out to
under
me.
Under the thing, and so they must have, like, a beehive in there. So that's nice.
Fair play, yeah. I'm fine with that. Let them get on with it. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah, I'm happy with that.
But it turns out, he's just a raging psychopath.
So it turns out that if you are a normal person, you are an existential threat to the satanic pedophile elite who run our Western governments and institutions. If you're a normal fellow with a happy family and a normal job, you are a threat to them. You are of no use to the revolution. This is probably the reason why all our TV and movies are constantly bashing normal people and promoting misfits and weirdos.
Yes. Yeah. This is something that's very clear. Just like even looking back at all the media that I've enjoyed, normal has been demonized for decades. And in so much media is the idea of this, the outcast has been deified almost. I think, I don't know if you've watched it. Have you seen AA's video on American Beauty?
I don't think I have, actually.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's pretty good, actually. He points out the subversive nature of the fact that all of the aspirational characters are a bunch of outcasts and weirdos and freaks, and the one normal person is told at one point that being normal is real weirdness. And being part of like the sorts of subcultures that I've been part of, like goth and heavy metal and such, I've heard it so many times with people just going like, "Oh, I don't want to be normal because being normal's really boring." It's like, what an insightful comment that is. I'm sure you didn't read that on Tumblr.
Yeah, how original. You came up with that thought yourself, did you?
Hmm.
Tony D and Little Joan with another Legend of the Pines. From CapeMay.com comes the story of the ghost of Higbee Beach. There was a hotel in Cape May called the Higbee Hotel in the mid-1800s, operated by Thomas and Joseph Higbee. When the brothers died in the 1870s, Thomas wanted to be buried on the hotel property, and he was. But in 1937, his niece moved the body, and this didn't sit well with Thomas. The hotel is long gone, but Thomas continues to wander the beach where his hotel once stood, admiring the natural beauty of his beach.
Love these stories.
Yeah. Even in death, he could admire the lovely scenery. How nice.
Okay, so that video that I posted up a couple of days ago of me selling out all my books at Perth and then, oh, what am I going to do next? That is no different from that stupid nurse, I realized. And hell, even before I was about to get this ready to do this video.
You probably should just limit it to relevant questions. But seriously, well done about selling out your books.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, I think it's great.
I've not seen that nurse clip either, but I'm aware that it's the clip of somebody who's like, somebody's just died.
Yeah. And she has to film her reaction for TikTok, because or else it's not valid.
Apparently her pain is what's important in this.
Yeah. Anyway, Drew says, if Boris is so concerned about surrounding himself with supporters, you think he'd be more concerned with gaining and maintaining the support of the British people? Yeah, as in, doing the right thing will gain you supporters. Being, like, a bloviating grifter won't.
I think expecting the political elite in the UK to do the right thing is wishful thinking at this point, sadly.
Yeah, it's just the time's passed, I suppose. Omar says, Nish Kumar and Ash Sarkar are birds of a feather. We're winning. Yeah, very much. You know, Nish Kumar's comments are very much race war comments. And it's like, right, okay, thanks, Nish. What a lovely sentiment from people welcomed into the least racist country on earth, only to spit in the face of their hosts. I don't care if they have any kind of British citizenship. They sure as hell don't have any British spirit. That's totally true. Taffy says, the current government is corrupt and useless. All the alternatives are worse. Plaid Cymru and the Scottish Nationalist Party are fake nationalists who wish to sell us out to the EU. The eco-fascist Green Party, who will blast us back to the Stone Age and import everything from food to labour from the Third World. The Lib Dems, who will say they'll do anything for a ministerial car and an expense account. And Labour, the anti-white, anti-British socialists, who will do everything the Conservatives did, but with higher taxes. So that is the quickest way of summarising British politics. That's, for anyone who's not in Britain, that is totally accurate, and this is why I'm not thrilled that Boris is going to be going. I'm not thrilled, because why? The alternatives are terrible.
Yeah.
Boris was terrible.
Like Boris was, if anything, an incredibly minor degree less terrible than the other options.
Boris was a wasted opportunity, that's what he was. Mm. Here's a full stacked parliament, 380 seats or whatever it is. Do everything you want, Boris. And Boris is like, yeah, I'm going to do nothing. I'm going to send your money to Ukraine.
Tony Blair, love him.
Yeah, idiot. S.H. Silver says, the fact the Tories were not shaken by the monumental failure to serve the electorate, but only by Partygate and random sexual allegation, shows they are both horribly out of touch with their London bubble, in their London bubble, but also how timid and tepid the electorate is when they are betrayed. What's stopping you from doing as the Dutch do and blockading ports to stop migrants? Because migrants aren't coming through ports, actually, is one reason. But you are absolutely right. Again, they do nothing to actually help the native people of Britain, everything to help the foreign populations of Britain, and foreigners elsewhere, and yet still we're like, well, the alternatives are worse. So,
yeah, I mean, I would love to see when you see clips from Scotland of those protests against migrants being deported for, you know, not legally being allowed to be here. I would love to see some actual counter-protests where they're almost helping the police get them into the van, but
that would
doesn't
good.
Happen.
Brandon says, me as an American sitting on his couch. Ha, you Brits and your crazy politics. Yeah, I know, but at least Boris isn't senile.
Are we sure?
Yeah, no, we're sure. Boris is just useless.
Oh, that's right.
He's not senile. Quinn says, while the Conservatives have lost me as a voter, that doesn't mean I'll be voting Labour. And that's what we saw at the recent, what was the by-election that happened the other day? Where I think it was Labour or Lib Dems got the seat. But it wasn't because the Conservative voters had switched to Labour or the Lib Dems. It's because they literally just didn't come out. And so there were something like 20,000 missing votes from the Conservatives because it didn't turn up.
I hope that has some positive results, but I can never help but think with the Tories that when anything goes wrong for them in the elections, that they'll just go, oh, I guess we just need to be more like Labour then.
Yeah.
That is always the worry.
Both major parties have gone off the rails recently, and we desperately need a full reset of Parliament. I don't know who's supposed to represent me anymore. Well, that's the thing. And there isn't even a UKIP-style party around that has, a noticeable leader.
Isn't Farage in charge of any of the parties?
No, he's Reform, but, he works at GB News, so it's not like he's actively campaigning.
Yeah, because we have Reform and Reclaim, but I'm not too familiar with their
Yeah, the problem promises. Well, that's the thing, right? The dissident patriot parties need to coalesce under a proper leader who has some sort of elected office. That's what needs to happen. So basically, they need to choose the most based and red-pilled area that is most disillusioned with the Conservatives and get an MP in that area and then start building a party around that. But the thing is, it's not going to happen because no one's got any bloody sense anymore. Baron von Warhawk says, Boris is weak, Boris is a fool. He had the whole United Kingdom within his grasp and he let it slip away. Yeah, and it's because he didn't take strong enough action to start with. The fact that the media were allowed to continually nip at his heels and constantly weaken his position and wear away. He should have been actively taking strong, striding steps. And the media should have been desperately trying to catch up with the latest absolute hammer blow that he would have been delivering. Literally, it should have been like Tony Blair, just, doing whatever he wanted constantly, day after day, but he had no vision.
Remember, if you're in charge and the mainstream media is seething at everything that you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, and the public will approve of it. Jimbo says, it's almost like Nish Kumar wants there to be a rise of white nationalism in this country. I guess it'll give him more material for his increasingly elitist audience. Possibly. George says, perhaps it's maybe worth it for the Tories to be demolished so that the people would actually start voting for some real alternatives like Reclaim. It would be nice, but for some reason, people are obsessed with Conservatives and Labour. I just don't know what it is. Theodore says, in a sensible country, a government would fall apart because it was horrifically incompetent at running the country. In the UK, however, horrific incompetence at the purpose of government is given a pass, and it takes a sex scandal, not anything in itself to do with how well they run the country, to bring them down. Yeah. Free Will says, if the Tories only did what they promised Labour would not... if the Tories only did what they promised, Labour would not get a look in, but that is wishful thinking of the highest order. Yeah. General Haiping says, I'm fairly sure that the recent resignations are due to the release of the blowjob gate story that's now started circulating in the tabloids. I'm actually not familiar with that.
Oh, I think I heard Rory talk about blowjob gate. Apparently somebody walked in on
Boris getting a blowjob.
Off of Carrie. Yeah.
I don't think it's... Because that's just, icky. But this, this is sexual assault, and that's, serious.
Yeah, this is far more serious.
Boris may well have been what the country needed, but that time seems to have passed. It's like, well, apparently not, since he got nothing good done. Colin, when it comes to the protest, says, issue museum security with tasers and superglue softener.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
I would love to watch these people get tasered. Michael says, do these middle-class wank stains know that their dildos, windmills, and solar panels require petrochemicals to manufacture? Yeah, but they don't care because they're hypocrites. Henry says, Just Stop Oil nearly caused a major disaster at the British Grand Prix this weekend. They broke onto one of the straights, presumably to glue themselves to the track on 160 to 180 mile an hour section of the circuit.
Jesus,
don't stop them.
Christ.
I mean,
that doesn't mean the race needs to stop.
Yeah.
It's just another obstacle.
Luckily, quote unquote, the horrifying accident at the first corner meant racing was suspended before they got there. When rounded up during the break. The onboard from the drivers limping back to the pits with damaged cars showed them on the track, though. Really? That's interesting.
Mm.
And it would have killed them if they'd hit them. Yeah, absolutely. Tax Fraud says, Extinction Rebellion and Just Stop Oil is basically modern-day doomsday cults who delude themselves into thinking the world is ending so that they can save it just to add a bit of excitement to their own boring lives. And there we go. That's boom. That's it.
Done.
And this is not a new phenomenon, obviously. You get these doomsday cults all throughout history where they literally want some excitement in their boring lives to think they're the hero of some grand narrative. So you're absolutely correct there. That's probably the reason that all of the middle class, that's probably the reason that it's all middle class, because the working class actually have some fulfillment in their lives and have less free time to waste on stupid performative grandstanding.
Isn't that the truth?
It's so totally true. Sorry, who's this one, John?
We've got another resignation. We've got, what's her name? Celine Saxby.
What did she do? Private secretary, right, okay. Right. Kevin says, would people take these people, the middle class wank stains, if they could actually put forward a feasible alternative to using oil? But people would take them seriously, but they can't. Most sensible people who worry that even 10% of the doom and gloom these nutters have put forward have the sense to realise that we have no option but to depend on oil. Perhaps if the Just Stop Oil and the other sandal-wearing, beardy, man-bun Don numpties would give up their iPhones and cut their electricity use to zero, they might show that they were serious. I won't hold my breath on that one. Yeah, that's exactly right. They're obvious hypocrites. Like you're saying with the young woman who's flown around the world on daddy's money. It's like, oh, we've got to stop oil. Shut up.
But at the same time, her manifesto is like, we need to ground all flights forever. Yeah. All right, you're just going to sail across the world then.
Yeah. On a sailboat, yeah. You know.
And I can't do that, yeah. You know.
Maureen says they must have touched the hay wane when covering it up. The oil, sweat, and dirt from your hands will chemically damage the painting over time, which is why you should never touch old, fragile art. And spray paint always spreads to a larger area than visible. Some of the pigments must have reached the paintings. Goddamn hippies. Yeah, and they should be prosecuted for it.
Mm-hmm.
Zaranex says, those pretentious bourgeois avocado toast nibblers have no clue what they're doing. The avocado and toast is in peril because of their betters who spun them up, not because of a contrived climate crisis that they're more likely to add to. The glue they use is most likely petroleum-based. Yeah, and at the end of the day, have they ever asked people, are you in favour of climate change? Yes. this bit's not going on YouTube. Sardoc says, I think we should profile these protesters and shut down gas and power supply to their houses.
I mean, if they're so willing to sacrifice for the rest of us,
how could they say no?
I mean, apparently that Hannah woman, her Scottish house is ridiculously energy inefficient, so you'd be doing us all a favour, love. Yeah.
Harry says, these vandals are the archetypal middle-class posh kids who are possessed by utopian idealistic dreck. Couldn't get more cliche. Have you tried? Clear them out. Totally agree. Let's go on to the adult daycare one. X, Y, and Z says, for those starting out, beware those little cough perks cough. They're golden handcuffs. You become less productive, and the next thing you know, you're spending your whole life in the office. Yes, exactly. This is what I mean. Like they're just really well cared for prisoners, basically. Like they can't really leave this environment now.
Well, yeah, they're the prisoners that have been convinced that their cell is freedom.
Yeah. T says, we have days each month, nay, each week, where we unwind. It's called the weekend. I work throughout the week, then spend the weekend painting Warhammer, playing games, hanging out with friends and relaxing, then back to work on Monday. And I bet you feel like you've done a good job as well, right?
Yeah.
Because we're like, what pride in her work can she take?
That's the thing. It astounds me that she can do... Go to work, have a cancelled meeting, do nothing, and then sit around in the like mindfulness room like she needs to unwind from whatever it is that she was doing.
Yeah, I know. It's wild, isn't it? Jimbo says, it must be wonderful to work in Silicon Valley, get paid stupid amounts to mince around your office playground with the occasional meeting about diversity and inclusion. No wonder, no surprise that these incredibly sheltered people get stressed when presented with concerns outside their bubble. Well, I mean, yeah, it's totally true.
And they've developed no skills on how to cope.
Theodore is having a bit of a
yep.
bit of a day here. $70,000 for an intern?
Yep.
That's roughly the same as a fairly high-rank NHS manager. And I mean that for the type that actually does a necessary job. Yeah. Yeah, that's what they are. Well, the code monkeys are like places like Google, John, who's raising that, apparently on $129,000. Oh, yeah, that's right. Apparently they're just working on the old code, aren't they? So, yeah, these things aren't going anywhere. Michael says, there's a lot of privileged workers that need to spend a day knee-deep in miners, like...
Something.
Yeah. Underground working hard-faced rock mine. Yeah, I'd love to see them actually doing a hard day's labour. Can you even imagine?
They would probably think it's like in Zoolander.
Well, they would just... It would be literally a form of abuse.
I would pay to see that television show.
I would happily pay.
Someone set that up.
Yeah. Maureen says, are we absolutely sure Natasha is not actually a food blogger? We're not.
What
would she do differently if she was?
Maybe she's just breaking into these places and sampling their food. Maybe that's what's going on.
Catastrophic Regression Threshold says, on the tech daycare, this is rather frustrating to see. I make less than that working 50 hours a week as a CNC programmer in a manufacturing job. Corporate America has become a joke. Hammurabi says, I have yet to meet someone who works in IT and actually works hard. It took over a month to get a tech issue at work fixed that I was able to diagnose within 5 minutes. Supreme Duck says, seems like the chill Friday some tech companies have. It's one Friday a month. You can call it a day off, but I bet the rest of her month is more moderate. People like to show the best part of their day, so I'd hate to bash them for this. And that is fair. You know, they're obviously, you know, presenting it in the nicest light, but it's like, it makes you look like you do nothing.
But, and also, literally at the same time, having worked a job that is relatively comparable to something like that, I can say there is a lot of sitting around and pretending like you're doing something that goes on in those jobs.
SH Silver says, as someone working in an actual tech job that's focused on building software, I assure you it's not nearly this glamorous. These larger corporations are just piles of money that are good at making more money, not through solutions that actually help customers, but through appealing to rich urban board members with flashy demonstrations and progressive talking points. And that is probably the most true statement about all of this, isn't it? Like, honestly...
Yeah. What's this that we've got on screen? Is it Nish Kumar again saying...
Oh, yeah.
Nish Kumar is trending, so Nish Kumar knows what Nish Kumar wants.
Nish Kumar is a racist. Shut up, you racist.
Yeah.
Anyway, Harry says, that young woman from LinkedIn is the modern 20-something in a nutshell. A shallow, hollow life, filled with short-term satisfaction, pleasure-seeking, devoid of any real achievement. No family, no responsibility, no real culture or attachment to tradition, plugged into the corporate Globo Homo regime... Utterly artificial and inauthentic. That is exactly how I feel.
And doesn't that just sound like a horror story?
Yeah, it's a very Brave New World.
It's a horror story that you don't realize that you're in until all of your life has collapsed around you and you have nothing keeping you to reality.
But imagine in like 20 years when she's still doing exactly the same thing she did when she was 22 years old.
Except the only thing that's changed is the number she gets in her bank account is bigger than it was.
And she's got a more impressive managerial title. Like, she'll still have done nothing. She'll have accomplished nothing. And will she be like, well, you know, where's the meaning in my life? You know? Who knows?
Well, that's a question for them to figure out, I suppose. Well, that's all the time we've got for today. Thank you very, very much for tuning in. We'll be back later on, actually, at 3:30 for the book club of The War in the West with Carl and Callum. So tune in for that if you're a premium subscriber. Until then, though, we'll see you tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Have a great day. Goodbye.